AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Another semifinal crash, another lost chance at a medal for U.S. snowboarder Lindsay Jacobellis. She was leading the race when she crashed near the end of the slushy course. Iva Semkova of the Czech Republic dominated, posting three wire-to-wire victories on her way to gold. Silver for American Andrew Weibrecht in the men's Super G.
This is probably the most emotional day of ski racing I've ever had.
Fellow American Bodie Miller tied for the bronze, making him the oldest alpine skier to medal. The U.S. men's hockey team has a 4-0 lead over Slovenia after two periods of their match in Sochi. U.S. ice dancing partners Merrill Davis and Charlie White are among the favorites heading into today's competition. White says they're focused on the program, not the expectations.
Be able to go out on the ice and perform like how we practice. You know, everything else, all the pressure, is not something we have to concern ourselves with.
A jury in Jacksonville, Florida, failed to reach a verdict on a murder charge against Michael Dunn in the case of a teen fatally shot after an argument over loud music. The panel, which had deliberated for the better part of 4 days, found Dunn guilty of attempted murder and for shooting into a car full of teenagers, but they could not agree on first-degree murder, resulting in a mistrial on that charge. Lucia McBath is the mother of victim Jordan Davis.
It's sad for Mr. Dunn that he will live the rest of his life in that sense of torment. And I will pray for him.
The state's attorney says she is considering retrying Dunn on the first-degree murder charge. Four South Korean tourists and a bus driver have been killed in a bombing near a border crossing into Israel from the Sinai Peninsula. Egyptian officials say it could have been a car bomb or a remote-controlled bomb. This is AP Radio News. A lottery jackpot grows to an impressive figure. AP Radio's Sandy Kozel has more.
Is it time for lottery fever to spike again? Lottery officials say there was no jackpot winner in last night's Powerball drawing, so the current estimated jackpot has jumped to $400 million. That would be about $228 million if the winner took the cash value. And there's a good chance that total will grow by the next drawing on Wednesday. Do keep in mind the odds of matching all six numbers in the game are one in about 175 million. I'm Sandy Kozel.
In college basketball, top-ranked Syracuse remains undefeated. A layup by C.J. Farr with less than 7 seconds left gave the Orange their 25th straight win, 56-55 over North Carolina State. Number 3 Florida wins its 17th straight, beating 14th-ranked Kentucky by 10, 69-59. Tonight in New Orleans, the East plays the West in the 2014 NBA All-Star Game. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
At UPS, we take two things very seriously: your budget and our planet. It's why we've built one of the largest alternative fuel fleets in the industry. It's why we offer eco-responsible services like carbon-neutral shipping and carbon impact analysis. It's also why businesses trust UPS to provide customized solutions that cut costs and boost productivity. UPS is committed to helping you operate more efficiently and sustainably. Learn more at ups.com/gov.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Next Sunday, February 16th, we have the whole team from Le Diplomat coming in. We know you've been trying to get in, now you're going to hear about what's going on there. And it's Texas Day, and Hill Country Barbecue's coming in, and we're going to celebrate.
Howdy, cowpoke. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 AM.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Korn Ferry in Reston, Virginia. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Kim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan & Associates, and Les Smolin, Vistage. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today. Mr. Les Smolin, will you please give us the rundown?
Thanks, Herb. First, we have John Higginbotham, Chairman and CEO of Blue Ridge Networks. Second, we have Deborah Scott Thomas, President and CEO, Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated. We also have Michael Fischetti, Executive Director, National Contract Management Association, and Tim McGill, CEO, Hargrove, Inc.
Excellent. Let's get started introducing first John Higginbotham, who is the Chairman and CEO of Blue Ridge Networks. John, what is Blue Ridge Networks? What do you guys do?
Good morning, Herb. We're in the cybersecurity business. We lock down networks in cloud and enterprise environments.
How old is this company?
Good question. Blue Ridge has actually been around a while. It's 17 years. Most people haven't heard of it because for most of its history, it supported primarily government networks.
And now?
Last two or three years, we've expanded out and are doing a lot more in the commercial world.
And how'd you get involved with this organization known as Blue Ridge Networks?
Serendipity, as most things in life. I'm a recovering venture capitalist, so it was one of my old portfolio companies back in the early double aughts when there was a lot of government expansion. I had retired.
Right.
And was I couldn't get my handicap down any further in my golf game. So.
All right.
Got a phone call from some of the board members about 3 years ago to come in and help them think through how to take the capability to the commercial markets.
So how young were you when you began organizing teams around challenges? Tell us about that. How young were you?
As long as I can remember, to tell you the truth. It's was always kind of, what I got called on to do.
Where are you from originally?
I spent most of the boyhood years in West Virginia.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have one sister.
One sister. And give us an example of how you were pulling teams together as a kid.
Well, I mean, it's when you're a kid, basically you're faced with the typical problems of kids and trying to help problem solve, whether it's a dispute on the playground or
you were solving disputes. What kind of disputes were you solving on the playground?
Taking down bullies.
What
that
do you
was
mean?
Fun. We always dealt with those. In the classroom, it was always a case of trying to address some challenge in terms of a learning experience or organizing for sporting events or anything like
so
that.
So how young were you when you took down your first bully, and what was the
Five.
And what occasioned that? What caused you to step up?
This is going way back. Just seeing the younger kids being taken advantage of and nobody was addressing the problems.
So. How's that translate to your business career nowadays?
It's a good question. Most large challenges are really small problems that can be broken down into small issues.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Breaking things down into those actionable steps to be able to start to address a larger problem.
What characteristic was that in you, though, where you stood up for some other kids, and how's that expressing itself in your business today?
Most of my experience has been entrepreneurial situations in a high technology business where you're taking on needs in the marketplace.
There's something else in you that means you like things that are fair, don't you?
Well, I do, and I was just going to say, you see a lot of situations where advanced technologies and new ways to solve problems are getting buried in the chaos and the chatter in the marketplace. So finding situations that are not optimal or being satisfied optimally organizing teams and bringing capabilities together to go address those challenges is what I do.
Uh-huh. What were your mom and dad doing growing up?
Oh, we had great times. My mom was, in some ways, a serial entrepreneur herself.
Uh-huh.
Dad was the foundation engineering. You know, he built large engineering projects. So between the two of them, it was yin and yang.
Your mom was an entrepreneur. What kind of business did she have?
She worked for businesses. She started her own businesses, mostly in financial management and related kinds of things.
Did you ever, say, go to her office or help a kid growing up?
Of course.
What kinds of things did she have you do?
Run a teller operation at a bank, deliver packages, sit in meetings.
So what did you learn then that shows up in your management style today?
Interacting with other people, asking the right questions. I usually try and lead by asking questions and helping people come to some conclusion about how to address it. So in the day-to-day interactions of just talking to people and learning more about them.
With the justice and fairness, where did that first show up? How young were you?
Well, I think that, you know, that was always core to our principles. I mean, we grew up in a spiritual home. We grew up in a very stable home, so it was just part of what we did.
Yeah. You also used a comment when we were speaking earlier about being raised by a town.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was a small town, West Virginia, and, you know, when you basically know everyone in a town of 2,000 people, for, you know, 15 years, everybody knows everybody.
How does that show up as a CEO and you managing your business?
You know, I like to manage a lot by walking around.
Uh-huh.
Where try and tend to build organizations that are as flat as possible because, you know, small teams solve big problems. So I spend a lot of time from, you know, receptionists all the way up through the board members just, you know, how you doing, what kind of challenges are you having. It's that small town feeling of getting to know people and working with them as opposed to over them or around
there's
them.
Kind of in that flatness, there's kind of a fairness, and it seems like that's
we
where
think
you
so.
See
we try.
Creativity comes out of that.
Big on sharing credit, you know, teaching moments in our little organization is when somebody takes credit for something that was a team effort.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
Oh, poor example of both. I like to think that the principles, though very different, came together in a way that was useful.
John, when did you become the go-to guy?
Early on. I mean, it really was always kind of what happened. I would be the guy that would kind of quietly listen, and when somebody would say, we don't know what the hell to do, so have you thought about this? And it would oftentimes be a good way to approach the problem.
So where did you learn that? Where did that come from, though?
You know, it's hard for me to analyze that. I think it was really our style of growing up. We lived in a household that was promoted curiosity, exploration, learning, really asking questions and finding out the answers.
John, if you wanted to retire nowadays financially, could you?
I could.
Uh-huh. What time do you go into work in the morning?
Well, I'm usually online by 6.
And what time do you usually finish at night?
It's a good question. Rarely before 11.
Wait. You're telling me you're putting in 12, 14, 16-hour days?
With the occasional lunch break or visit with the kids.
But you don't financially need to do this, but you want to do this.
You know, money is the scorecard. It's not the end game.
Wait. What do you mean by that? I'm not sure I understand.
The measure of success, an outcome from a process is, you know, creating wealth. The process itself is building something. It's creating value.
What's more important, money or people?
Absolutely people.
Huh. And you got that growing up in a small town?
Absolutely. Because in a small town, you know, everybody has to pitch in to get stuff done. You know, when harvest time came around in August, if you were anywhere between 7 years old and 17, you're getting farmed out to somebody's field to throw hay in a barn. So you learn to pitch in and help problem solve in a team environment.
I understand there's a lot of folks that are you know, looking for opportunities. Are there opportunities? I mean, are there more opportunities tomorrow or were there more opportunities yesterday?
Oh, I like to think absolutely the future is bright.
And when you meet somebody to bring them onto the team, what are you looking for?
You know, we used to have a saying, you can take the fire out of them, but you can't put it in them. And it's one of those things where you're looking for somebody that has that spark, has that curiosity, has that ambition to perform well, and that's more than just make a lot of money.
But do I need to have specific? What's more important to you? Is it my personality or is it my specific experience?
No, it's a little bit of both, but I think if personality is definitely, you know, neck to neck with experience, because mm-hmm. you know, I know a lot of people that have had great training, but mm-hmm. they just don't have the drive to apply that training mm-hmm. to create something.
Good, David.
So you're in a technology field.
Yes.
And you're speaking of the human capital.
Absolutely.
Completely different things.
No, I totally disagree.
Okay. Please explain.
In fact, the origin of our technology intellectual property is our human capital.
What do you mean by that?
Innovation. You know, today's technology is yesterday's technology. So, you know, how are we going to develop those new capabilities for the future? It's what we can imagine, and it's what we challenge ourselves to create. We live in a marketplace today where the innovations that we all enjoy in telecommunications, broadcasting, IT, were created by somebody.
John, are mom and dad around nowadays?
Dad's passed. Mom's uh-huh. still around, and still she's still part-time work. She's reached
how
an
many
age
years
where
ago
it's
did
not
dad
full-time.
Pass?
Three, almost 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. If dad was here right now, do you think he'd be surprised about what you've been able to accomplish?
No.
What do you mean?
He was. Dad, in his quiet way, was every bit of a pioneer himself. I mean, mm-hmm. he was involved very early on in the missile business in the mm-hmm. United States. He built large construction projects.
In all different forms, huh?
He was quiet but effective mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. creating change.
What's the website address for Blue Ridge Networks?
BlueRidge.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with John Higginbotham, Chairman and CEO of Blue Ridge Networks here on Executive Leaders Radio with my host, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan and Associates. Kim Shanahan, who is the Managing Director of Korn Ferry, and Les Mullen Vistage. This is her poem. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight. And your name is?
David Shulman.
And David, the organization is?
Information Concepts.
And what makes Information Concepts special?
We're a fixed-price, full lifecycle custom software development shop.
Wait. Your fixed-price software development. How long have you guys been around?
32 years.
So how do you manage to do that? You must have some very special processes to make sure that you sell what you can deliver with confidence and then deliver what you sell. Otherwise, you wouldn't be around this long. Do you have any repeat customers?
All our customers are repeat customers.
So you're telling me that customers buy software development from you because they know they get a fixed price, they know what they're going to get. Do you guarantee a timeline also?
Absolutely. Everything's guaranteed. Every screen, every process, every report, line item and priced, and every line item has a date.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that all the interim processes are dated and priced so that when you get to the final result, there's no surprises?
Exactly.
Huh. And how long have you been doing this for?
We've been doing it 32 years. What we've done in the last few years, if I might, is developed a visualization process that allows the clients to actually see what we're going to build and take it out for a test drive and kick the tires without us writing a line of code.
What's the website address for this organization?
Infoconcepts.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Infoconcepts.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan Associates, Kim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, and Les Mullen Vistage. I'd like to introduce Deborah Scott Thomas, President and CEO of Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated. Deborah, what is Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated? What are you guys doing?
Data Solutions and Technology is a management consulting organization providing solutions to our customers. Mm-hmm. Our customers include the local, state, and federal governments mm-hmm. and some commercial clients.
Mm-hmm. How large or small is this organization?
This organization today consists of 450 employees.
And how did you get a job with them?
I started Data Solutions and Technology.
Wait a minute. This company is 450 people. And you started the business?
I started the business along with, I call it my half person, uh-huh. my husband, because uh-huh. he had to continue his job, so it's been 1.5 people.
Wait. You started it with your, it was his idea?
My idea.
But he kept his job?
he had to keep the job to keep paying the bills.
So you guys took a risk here with you quitting your job and doing this and your husband keeping his job so you could get this thing rolling.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. The biggest challenge for me was giving up that paycheck every 2 weeks, knowing that my name and Social Security number was going to be on a
piece of paper. Where are you from originally? Where are you from?
I am from Montgomery, Alabama.
Montgomery, Alabama. back in the 60s, were you part of that whole thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, what did that teach you about entrepreneuring, that whole segregation kind of stuff and discrimination kind of stuff?
It made me stronger.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
It made me stronger from the standpoint of the two people that had the greatest influence on my life were my mother and my father.
What do you mean?
My father had a short tenure in life in as much as he passed away when I was 8 years old. But prior to that time, everywhere he went, basically, he took me, and he would always talk about business, being in business, how to do business, how to work with people, how to get the most out of life. As a child, I didn't understand why. Why me? I always would ask myself that question. I didn't know that it was going to be a short reign that I would be with him, though, that he would be with us.
Is he still with you?
No, he transitioned into heaven 52 years ago.
Uh-huh. Is he still with you?
Oh, absolutely. How's he's my guardian angel.
How's he still with you?
He's my guardian angel.
What do you mean?
Leading me all the way. From the standpoint of early on, he told me to always be courageous. Always know that I had to be accountable for my actions, be responsible, and always strive for excellence.
I thought business was blood and guts and kill the next guy and that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely not.
What do you mean?
It's working with people. It's grooming them, helping them, growing.
What? Grooming them, helping them, growing them?
Yes. And starting Data Solutions and Technology, I started it for three reasons. First was to become one of the best companies in the United States of America. Second was to effect change for others. And the third was to be successful.
What, tell me about Mom. What was Mom doing?
Mom was really taking care of all of us. There were seven children.
Where are you in the pecking order?
I am the fifth of seven children.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. Basically, they had a boy, girl, girl, boy, girl, girl, boy. And so each one had a pair except for myself. So I basically became the triangle wheel that I could float around to those other three pairs and do as I needed to do and what I wanted to do.
And the effect on your business career of that?
The effect on that was a matter of knowing that I had to take risk, I had to make change happen, and I just kept everybody going all the time.
What do you mean you kept everybody going all the time?
When anything would come up and the rest of the system brothers will look at something, I would say, why not? We can do this. And from the perspective of, with my father leaving seven children behind, we were farmers. Okay, my mother only had a ninth grade education. But it was a thing, her thing was we were all going to get an education. Her children were going to be educated. So that was the foundation that she gave us early on in life. Put God first, get an education, you can go anywhere in the world.
Wait. Your father passed away and your mother wanted you guys to get in. How could that happen? I mean, you guys had to go to work or something, didn't you?
Yes, we were farmers. And basically, we babysat, we ironed, we did whatever kind of chores we could that were available that would bring in any type of money. I can remember getting 5 cents a day for chocolate milk and going to school.
What did that teach you about cash flow and managing money, and how do you use that nowadays?
That you've got to be accountable, and you've got to make sure you understand where your resources are coming from.
If I was doing a good interview, what questions should I be asking you that I'm not? What else should we know about you that I'm not asking you? What else are you bringing into your business to create the business that's really impactful? You mentioned something about faith earlier in the interview.
Absolutely.
What's faith have to do with business?
Faith has given me that foundation of believing that I can achieve anything that I set my mind to it. I know that going back from a faith and a Bible verse from the standpoint, if you believe it and you seek it, you can achieve it.
That's
you
from the
knock
Bible?
And the door will be open. Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. So therefore, it's a thing of going back to my parents. It's always have been. If you want to achieve it, you can do it, but you've got to believe it.
How do you maintain that? I mean, you've been through some really adverse times when you go back to your childhood, your dad passing away, and all these other obstacles or challenges that you had to overcome, how do you keep that spirit alive?
I keep that spirit alive about looking around. In growing up, basically, I was very fortunate in as much as I grew up in a community made up of families. There were three families of about 100 different houses, and the three families were the Duncans, the Brooks, and the Rudolphs.
Yeah.
And it was a thing whereas from a standpoint of all, it took all of us to keep each other going because all of us were some type of farmers in, to survive in the South.
So you're all taking care of one another?
Taking care of one another. And it was a thing whereas you were always grounded and you were always responsible for your actions.
So everybody held each other to that?
Absolutely, to that standard.
Mm-hmm. And does that show up today for you in terms of how you lead?
Absolutely.
How so?
In working with my employees. My people are my number one asset. And that is what I preach every day, and that's what I want them to know. Recently, I was selected by them, which was a great surprise, to the Washington Business Journal, the most outstanding CEOs in the area. Mm. So I was among that selected group, and it was because of my employees putting me there.
Kim?
Do you have kids?
Yes, I do. I have three young men.
And your dad gave you some great advice growing up. What advice do you give your kids?
The advice I give my kids is, first of all, basically it goes back to keeping God first, believing in yourself, working hard for everything that you do, and striving to always put forth the best foot, putting your best foot forward.
Deborah, is there any similarity, or what is the similarity between being the CEO and being a mom?
Not very much, because I have...
Go ahead.
It's not... in dealing with people, it's a thing whereas all of us are seeking love, nurturing, guidance along the way. So from my childhood through motherhood, through being a CEO today, it's really working with people.
It's the same
people
stuff.
Helping people. Mm-hmm. People helping people mm-hmm. each and every day.
Mm-hmm. Next question.
So when you left the farm, you mentioned that you were in the Air Force. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And then when you got out of the Air Force, what made you think that you could be a business owner and to start this business?
And coming to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. okay, and getting introduced to small business. Mm-hmm. Well, from the standpoint of I was affiliated with the military from 1975 to 2006. Uh-huh. I started Data Solutions in 1994 because I went into the reserves. Uh-huh. I got off active duty, went into the reserves. I was hired in to a small organization called Stevens Engineering Corporation in uh-huh. Greenbelt, Maryland. And that's where I was introduced, and I was told, because I always thought you had to have $1 million in order to start a business.
Right.
Because I had worked with McDonnell Douglas, Johnson & Johnson Healthcare Products Division, all big billionaire companies.
But something turned it on, and you realized, I can do this.
In walking in, I was in the interview, and my president asked me, what did I want to do? And I said, one day I want to own my own business. I had always had that dream. But I don't have $1 million. So he just broke out and started laughing, and he says, okay, I'll see whether you're made out of the stock that you need to be made out of. And I'll let you know whether presidency is what you want. Because being a president, you must be crazy because it takes a lot to be one.
What did he see in you?
Yeah. What did he see in me?
Yeah.
From the standpoint, after working with me for 1 month, he came to my office and he said, Deborah, are you going to leave me? Because I was his vice president of human capital management or human resources back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm not thinking of leaving you. Why are you saying that? He says, because you have no business being here. You should be the president of your company.
Deborah, if Dad was here today, do you think he'd be proud of what you've done?
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
He'd be proud because he always told me to stand and be very courageous, to take the risk and to lead and effect change for others. Mm-hmm. And I effect change for others every day. And they let me know that.
And is Mom still around?
Yes, Mom is around. Mom is now 88 years old, and mm-hmm. she still is that great caregiver. She's always been a great caregiver.
And has she been to the office?
Oh, yes.
She's been to the office. How do you think she felt when she walked through the doors?
She is just so proud of me.
What do you mean?
And she always says that. She just can't, it's a matter of fathoming that her daughter today owns a corporation and is carrying out a dream that she always had.
The website address for Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated?
DSTIncorporated.com. That's DSTIncorporated.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Deborah Scott Thomas, President and CEO of Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated, with my co-hosts, Kim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan and Associates, Les Malone Visage, this is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com.
And what makes InPowerCoaching.com special?
Well, we help mid-level and senior leaders turn professional success into personal development.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Well, today, leaders to succeed at any level need to master soft skills. They need to be able to manage and lead people at all levels, and that means they have to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also need to master the process of learning to get along with people, and that's what we support them to do.
And you're supporting who to work better or to do what?
Well, for example, a professional who aspires to be in a senior leadership position needs to be able to negotiate their relationships with their staff, with their superior, with their peers. They need to communicate confidently in all kinds of formats, you know, one-on-one and in meetings. And we give them the resources to learn to do that and then be better at it.
And these resources are both one-on-one as well as online?
Yeah, we have a lot of programs online because this kind of support is usually cost prohibitive, and we make it very affordable by providing a lot of online resources as well as personal support.
How can I learn more about what you're offering and get in contact with you? Is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's I-N, PowerCoaching.com.
All right, excellent. And your name again is?
Dana Theus.
This has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan and Associates, Kim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, and Les Mullen Vistage. I'd like to introduce Michael Fischetti. Michael's the Executive Director of the National Contract Management Association. Michael, what is the National Contract Management Association? What are you folks doing?
We're a professional association, Herb, of government and industry contract managers, leaders, executives, that get together, and it's all about development and training of a workforce.
How many members do you have?
About 21,000.
And how many chapters?
About 115 chapters around the world.
And the members and these chapters, what's the purpose of them? Why do they belong to this organization?
It provides networking opportunities, training opportunities. We have certification programs, all about growing the knowledge base of the contract management profession, which, by the way, has, you know, as our government has been outsourced, these are the people that put those deals together to keep the government running.
So, because the government's outsourced, there's a need to understand how to contract with the government, and that's the purpose of this association?
Very complicated rules, regulations, new statutes all the time. It's much different than the commercial sector, and so these folks are constantly growing and learning to get how to do a better deal for the government.
And how did you get involved with this organization, Michael?
I was actually joined as a bet with my cube mate at NASA back in the 80s, where I went to take a certification program, an exam, and I said, I'll join if I pass the test, which I did, and got involved with the local chapter, which was Washington, D.C., and rose the ranks to become the president there, all volunteer, and then stayed with the association, was on the national board prior to my selection of this position.
It's interesting you used the word rise through the ranks, because I got that sense of you. How young were you when you began the rise through the ranks?
Well, believe it or not, Herb, nobody actually decides in high school they want to be a contracts manager for the government or the industry. You just sort of end up in it. And so I ended up in it. I had a couple of other jobs and started as a GS.
As a kid, what were you doing to rise through the ranks?
Probably my first leadership position was probably Boy Scout patrol leader.
What do you mean? Tell me, how did you get involved with the Boy Scouts, and tell me about how you rose through those ranks?
Well, all the kids were doing it. I joined the local chapter on Grand Island, New York.
And what was different about you than the other kids that joined the Boy Scouts?
I think I always wanted to get things done, always wanted to please. It's just sort of a curse I have where I want to get rise the ranks and try to accomplish things.
Wait a minute. How does this wanting to please, how's that helped you in business? I'm trying to figure that out.
I think as I go into positions and that, I see opportunities to improve things, and I just can't help myself but try to work towards improving the processes that are around me.
Wait a minute. But as opposed to doing it for the purposes of money, you do it for other purposes, it sounds like.
I believe, yes, I do. It's not about the money. It's just about the sense of accomplishment and success that we've heard in other folks you've interviewed. Do so. Gotcha. I like to achieve objectives. I ran 5 marathons back in the 90s, and I took that sort of responsibility and that achievement into other areas, and decided I'm going to pursue a law degree. I haven't been able to successfully pursue that philosophy in my golf game, but I've been able to do other things, and I feel fortunate to be in a position now where I can actually improve the way the government operates.
Mm-hmm. I really hear in this also a sense of mission. How young were you when you first felt a sense of mission?
I think I've always had a sense of mission. You know, it may be shortchanged, and as I became older and more mature, it's sort of grown. Mm-hmm. And I've probably been defining myself over the years, and I feel more confident where I'm at now than I ever had before.
Did you have a mission when you were in the Boy Scouts? Did you have a sense of mission, or did you have something before that?
Yeah, I think, to her point, I think I always wanted to do the job he has, and I can remember being a disc jockey in my bedroom on Grand Island, New York, and we would broadcast down to my mother downstairs in the kitchen on the intercom, on a little intercom set we bought, spinning records from the Monkees and the Beatles and that, and my brother published a newspaper, which I supported.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm the oldest of 4.
And how'd that affect you, being the oldest of 4?
A sense of responsibility, sense that I was setting the example. So I needed to, and I think I was, being the oldest, the firstborn Italian of my generation, a lot of pressure to, you know, to succeed, and you know, you're going to take the family to a different level.
And where'd you grow up?
Grand Island, New York, outside of Buffalo.
And was this primarily an ethnic Italian neighborhood?
No, it was kind of a typical suburb in western New York. My parents were both born in Brooklyn, and my dad transferred up there through my K-12 upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Liz?
I'm intrigued. You wanted to be a disc jockey like her, perhaps, and you end up as the head of an organization, National Contracts Management Association. Where's the connection?
Probably the need for acclaim and notoriety and attention. I like to achieve things. I like to fix things, and I think through various leadership positions, it unwittingly prepared me for where I'm at now.
So really, it's being acknowledged and recognized for the contribution that you're making.
Yes, but also I want to. It's a legacy. I took this position to improve the processes. It's not about. It's all about trying to leave things better than the way you found them. And I feel fortunate and proud of other jobs I've had where I think I did that.
As a kid, did you know that?
Probably not consciously, but certainly when given a task, you want to complete the task as purpose. You know, as well as you can, and you know, joining clubs and school and various organizations.
What do you find your, Jimmy, what do you think is your greatest personal achievement? What do you hold as your greatest personal achievement?
3 good kids, grown children now, all doing wonderful things.
What David just asked you, what do you find your greatest achievement being?
Probably the success I think I've enjoyed in terms of influencing the way government acquisition is being done.
When David asked you the question, though, you went into family stuff. Do you really think that that's your greatest?
At the end of the day, yes. A career is one thing, but it's your personal relationships. My wife and I are somewhat like this, where you leave someone better off than when you found them. If they're a better person after they've known you, isn't that the, you know, one person at a time?
I can understand in my personal life I want to do that. In business, though?
Oh, yes, and it's all about relationships. We have a great staff, and we have great employees and great members, but it's those interpersonal relationships that allow you to be the most effective.
Mm-hmm. Colin?
So who taught you about the importance of personal relationships?
Probably not consciously, but my mom is sort of an empathetic type of person. She was the one that always said you can do whatever you want and you can please, and you need you're as good as you want to be, and go for it.
What was the dinner table like in your house?
We had the traditional Leave It to Beaver family sit down with meat, potatoes, etc. Probably isn't on the food pyramid today what we were eating, but it was a traditional relationship and communal meal.
Mm-hmm. So you were building around that family value.
Yeah.
What was the conversation?
what did you do today? Did you get your homework done? Did you get everything done? Did you get everything done that you're supposed to do?
Accomplishment.
While you're sitting down watching TV, you should be up, you know, reading a book or something. So. Mm-hmm.
David?
How do you bring that same family atmosphere to the 21,000 members that you have?
One member at a time. I meet constantly, go around the country and meet with chapters and give talks and stuff. Meet with government executives and industry leaders routinely in the Pentagon or various buildings around Washington and other places. Again, just one person at a time developing relationships.
Mm-hmm. Colin? So you're not just making better contract managers, you're making better contracting.
Sense of community.
Yeah.
This community is often maligned, in my opinion, and it's them taking on ownership of their responsibilities and thinking of themselves as a profession, developing as a profession and what we expect of a profession to be.
David?
What is the largest obstacle you have yet to tackle?
Cultural norms. Certainly the last couple of years, if you've been anywhere around the federal government, you could imagine what it must be like, and it's been a very difficult year and a half or two. The sense of morale and initiatives and being able to get things done in the current environment and rise above politics and that, and this community does that.
What do you enjoy most about your job, Michael?
I think it's making things better than they used to be and meeting the people. It's kind of like who would have ever thought I would have ended up in a position that I'm at. I certainly never envisioned it. As it turned out, I was not knowingly building a fantastic resume, I guess, to obtain this job. And I really want to, I do by right by the folks that have been in this position before me. And this association goes back to the 1950s. It's been a long, slow climb for this community. And so mm-hmm. I feel like we are in a great position for me to take it to the next level and hand it off to the next one.
Is Mom aware of what you're doing nowadays?
Oh, yes. I'm going to tell her about this radio interview. I send her links to my blogs and newspaper articles. Hey, Mom, look at me. I'm on TV.
You're building a resume again.
As old as I am, I'm still trying to please my mother.
Uh-huh. How about your dad? How about Dad? Is Dad aware of what you're up to?
Yeah, Dad's aware and proud. He was a federal worker himself, and so he certainly takes Dad was a little harder nut to crack in terms of pleasing, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you're really in touch with your feelings. You're really in touch with who you are and how you feel about stuff.
I guess I am, yeah.
Does that help you in your business career?
I believe it does.
How?
You really need to know yourself and how you're perceived by others. And I've had folks along the way to help correct me and let me know when, hey, Mike, you're coming across in this direction or that direction. And that's not necessarily your intent. But as you all know, sometimes the way you communicate, it's all about how you communicate.
But isn't it difficult, like, listening to other people tell you, like, you're messing stuff up? Especially, you know, you're the head of this organization, 21,000 members.
Yeah, so they all tell me how I'm messing things up. And you just have to develop a crust and know how to, you know, to handle it. To know your limitations, I think Clint Eastwood once said.
But, I mean, it's so easy. I mean, I get all defensive and upset and angry when people tell me I'm wrong about stuff. You don't behave that way?
I exercise every day. I go for a little jog, whatever I can do. I like to burn it out in a healthy way.
Ah, so you're trying to keep yourself in a healthy vein constantly so that you're really positive in working with these people and moving the whole organization ahead.
Yes, it's definitely true. We are volunteer-based. It takes the entire community coming together, and it's hopefully my job, and hopefully I'm doing a good job of trying to bring that together.
It's community-based, volunteers. How many volunteers are involved?
We are totally volunteer-based out of the 21,000 members. Everybody, all our chapters around the country, they have programs. The speakers are volunteer.
Wow.
The officers, the directors. We have extremely small paid staff.
What is the website address for the national
NCMAHQ.org.
NCMAHQ.org.
Yeah.
We would speak with Michael Fischetti, Executive Director of the National Contract Management Association here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan and Associates, Kim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, and Les Small and Vistage. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Cassie Self, Marketing Manager, Buchanan & Edwards. Cassie, what is Buchanan & Edwards?
We are an IT consulting firm, and we are committed to bringing innovation and efficiency to our federal clients.
And what's your role in the company?
My role in the company is I'm leading both the internal and external marketing and communications initiatives and really connecting our employees, with our executives and our management team, but then also, you know, relaying our messages to our customers.
And what do you like most about your job?
The people.
What is it about the people that makes them special?
Everybody at the company has, you know, a certain level of excitement, and you know, you really see their passion for helping our clients.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think your clients appreciate about the company?
I think that our clients, first, you know, they appreciate our quality. All of our employees are really committed to helping our clients improve their business functions and you know, bringing that level of quality.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about your work?
I would say the people again. You know, the people that I interact with every day, and the team that I work with, and being able to share our message and our, you know, our solution with our clients.
That's great. Who do you think is the perfect kind of client for Buchanan Edwards?
An organization that that, you know, that needs to. An organization that has a lot of processes set in place that could be improved with technology, improved, you know, by bringing efficiency and, you know, automating a lot of stuff.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.buchanan-edwards.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Cassie Self, Marketing Manager at Buchanan and Edwards. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Korn Ferry in Reston. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Colin Callahan, Colin Callahan and Associates, Tim Shanahan, Korn Ferry Managing Director, and Les Smolin Vistage. I'd like to introduce Tim McGill. Tim is the CEO of an organization known as Hargrove, Inc. Tim, what is Hargrove, Inc.?
We're a company that designs, builds, and installs environments for exhibits, trade shows, and events.
And how large or how small is this organization?
We're 250 full-time employees and a couple hundred part-time.
250 full-time and a couple hundred part-time. And how long have you been the CEO of this organization?
Since 2001.
And when you took over as CEO, how large or how small was the organization? Or how large or how small was it then versus how large or how small is it now?
We've about tripled in size in the last 13 years.
So you've tripled the organization in 10 years or so, 15 years?
Well, I'd say our team has tripled the organization.
Well, who had the vision of what it would take to grow this thing?
Well, because we are diversified and involved in so many different industries, we rely heavily on our team, both our executive management team, our directors, and our managers. And I'd say that the vision comes from within, within our group, and bubbles up to the top.
So, and I understand you work with your wife.
That's correct.
And that originally this was your wife's family business that you and your wife purchased and have tripled the size of it.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And what is it about this business that appeals to you?
Well, it's different every day. We do over 1,000 events a year throughout the country and the world. And the interesting part is that every event is different. And it's typically face-to-face marketing. And in, when you're involved in face-to-face marketing, you get the opportunity to meet people from all different walks of life.
How young were you when you fell in love with this industry?
Well, I was in college when I had my first exposure to it, and I worked part-time setting up exhibits at the Georgia World Congress Center in Atlanta, where I was living, and had the opportunity to see people come in from all over the world, and particularly international, and just fell in love with it and saw it as a gateway to my future.
Fell in love with what?
With meeting different people. And seeing where they were coming from, their different perspectives, both in their cultures, their knowledge, their education.
So this was like a community center for you.
Yeah, it was. It became a passion, a hobby. It became my life.
So you really enjoy pulling a team around the vision like you're doing with these events.
I do, because I'm not the best event person out there. Mm-hmm. So I rely on our team because we do have the best event professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't consider myself a very good event person, but I do consider myself a good leader of event people.
How young were you when you began to take the ball and run with it? Because I just get the sense you're that kind of guy.
Well, fortunately, I had an opportunity when I was 13 years old to get my first job, which was working as a dishwasher at the Waffle House.
Uh-huh. What did you do different than all the other kids that were doing that job?
Well, most of the kids were a little bit older than I was at the time, and I was pretty small and had a difficult time doing some of the tasks. So mm-hmm. I realized early on I had to be an overachiever to meet the expectations of.
Give me an example of what you mean that you found that you had to do, that you had to put, you had to set yourself the task with it.
Well, I was about 5 foot tall, and I had mm-hmm. to throw a garbage can into the dumpster, throw the garbage out into the dumpster, and I couldn't reach it. So I got up on top of the dumpster, pulled it up, threw the garbage can in, and immediately fell in after it.
Uh-huh. Well, aside from falling in, how's that affecting, or how's that have an effect, or how did that help shape you in your business career nowadays? What's that say about you?
Well, I realized that there will always be challenges, and the trick to those challenges is figuring out creative ways to overcome those challenges.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 5 siblings.
Uh-huh. Where'd you grow up?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. 5 siblings. Where are you in the pecking order?
Number 5.
You're the youngest.
No.
Second to the youngest.
Second to the youngest.
Uh-huh. How'd that affect you being second to the youngest?
Well, growing up around 5 other kids, you're always looking for opportunities, particularly around the dinner table. So you had mm-hmm. to make your own opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a very competitive group, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but also very caring, loving. Mm-hmm. We grew up in a great family. Mm-hmm. So.
And you and your wife are running this business nowadays, correct?
Yes.
What do you do different than your wife? What does she do better than you? What do you do different than her?
Wow. You're really going to ask that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's the brains.
Uh-huh.
She's the creative. Uh-huh. And I'm the organizational leader.
Tell us a little bit more. Is that something that, you know, day one you guys decided certain titles and that's what you stuck to, or was it more organic than that?
It was definitely organic. She has a natural talent to be out and about with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
She also has a artistic talent about her where mm-hmm. she can see what will work for an event.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got the core traits of mm-hmm. the event industry in her,
mm-hmm.
and I have more of this sort of managerial leadership.
What's your wife's title? What's your title?
She's COO and president, mm-hmm. and I'm CEO.
Uh-huh. And any other family members involved in the business?
Yes, she has. Her sister is involved.
Mm-hmm.
She's an account executive or sales executive,
uh-huh.
and also her father-in-law still stays in touch.
Stays in touch. Offers advice. What do you mean?
Yes, he does, and we look forward to it. He created a great culture, a great heritage within the organization, so mm-hmm. the employees truly love to see him come back and visit.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
As the organizational leader, as you framed it, what's that unique talent or skill that you bring that allows people to want to follow you?
Well, it's to find the best in all of the employees and then take advantage of their strengths and then encourage improvement in their weaknesses. So it's constantly looking for what everybody in the organization can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about your own experiences, what in your experience actually made you recognize that that was actually an important thing to be able to bring as a leader?
Well, I recognized my own weaknesses and then I also what my strengths were. And being not the smartest bear in the room, I always realized that I had to work a little harder and overachieve to be successful and to be different. So I recognize also that others have their challenges and their weaknesses, but they can overcome them if they try and if they have help with it.
Mm-hmm. Kim?
You've tripled the business in a pretty short amount of time. Did you start as CEO?
No, I started off as an account manager, an entry-level position.
And how did you rise through the ranks?
Just through trying to overachieve. And the business has a culture of rewarding those that work hard and are loyal to the organization. And I was very fortunate for those opportunities.
And so you started at the ground floor?
I started at an entry-level position, yes.
And what advice do you give people coming into your organization?
Well, learn all facets of the industry and learn all facets of our company. It's very important to learn what everybody in our company does, and from the fellows that are loading the trucks all the way through the executive level.
Why? I mean, if I'm the CEO, what do I have to bother with that stuff for?
Because if you don't know how important the guy loading the truck is, you're likely not to get your truck on time.
Wait a minute. The guy loading the truck's just the guy loading the truck.
Yeah, but when you need that truck for an installation of an event that there is no do-over, that truck is pretty darn important.
Are you telling me that a chain's only as good as its weakest link?
Absolutely.
So you're telling me that everybody on the team is really important?
Extremely important.
You don't think you're the most valuable player on the team?
By far not.
Really?
Absolutely.
So it's you don't go around yelling at people and, you know, and telling them what to do and stuff like that. It's like you really value and respect who they are and their contribution to keeping the chain.
I certainly do, and it's something that we press throughout the organization through all levels of management of the company.
Mm-hmm. Colin?
You mentioned that you had a real passion for this work when you were in college, that right away you had a passion for it. How has that passion informed your role now as the CEO and driving?
Well, it was a great way to get introduced to the business because you saw the business from the ground up. Mm-hmm. You saw what was important to the customer. You saw what was important to the folks that were working, my peers that worked around beside me. So it's something that if you learn that early on in the foundation of your growth in a career, it's something you never forget.
Mm-hmm. And how do you infuse that now? What's the special thing about your organization?
Well, I'm able to use that when I go on a show floor, an exhibit, or a trade show, and talk the talk of the folks that are setting that exhibit up or setting that trade show up or involved in the day-to-day work of the event people.
Mm-hmm. Liz?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Tim, you described it earlier when you were describing your passion, that this was the coolest industry. What was it about it that was so cool? And go ahead.
Well, it's an event. And it's anything from a televised event to a event with 50, 60, 70, 80,000 people. So we get the benefit of being able to see the fruits of your labor. And it's almost immediate gratification and satisfaction of all the work and effort you put into it that culminate during that time of the event.
Is it still the gateway that you referred to earlier when you went to that first one?
It absolutely is the gateway because we continue to have opportunities each and every year that we never had before. One of our big growth areas right now is international, and we did very little of that previously. So,
why would international be a growth area? And what kind of stuff international? What are you talking about?
We have an opportunity and have been doing a lot of international meetings from both the State Department, both governmental and non-governmental.
Do you expect that trend to continue or to decline over the short course of time? What's that look like, that trend with international meetings?
It's getting stronger.
Why would that be?
I think that the level of expertise in the meetings industry is continuing to climb, mm-hmm. and they're looking for solutions for environments that we create, so it has opened up a great deal of opportunity for us.
So different countries want to come together with other countries?
They do, and they set their bar by what the United States achieves first, and mm-hmm. then fortunately, since we're involved here, we get that opportunity to leverage cool. that in other mm-hmm. countries.
What is the website address for Hargrove?
HargroveInc.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Tim McGill, CEO of Hargrove Inc. Can you please give us a rundown on who we've had to talk with today, Mr. Les Smolin?
Thanks, Herb. Yeah, we had John Higginbotham, Chairman and CEO of Blue Ridge Networks. We also had Deborah Scott Thomas, President and CEO, Data Solutions and Technology Incorporated. We had Michael Fischetti, Executive Director, National Contract Management Association. And finally, we ended with Tim McGill, CEO of Hargrove, Inc.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Les Smolin, Vistage, Kim Shanahan, Corn Ferry, Managing Director, and Colin Callahan Associates for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about these executive leaders. And thank you for joining us today. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Are you ready to race for impact? Are you ready to race for the cure? Join Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure this Mother's Day weekend on the National Mall. Saturday, May 10th marks the 25th anniversary of the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure events in Washington, D.C., with fun for the whole family, including a race just for kids, everyone can help fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and support services for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Last year alone, programs receiving National Capital Area grants provided over 18,000 mammograms, educated more than 190,000 women about breast health, and assisted over 6,000 women in receiving timely and high-quality treatment services. But the work doesn't stop there, so get ready to race for impact. Get ready to race for the cure Saturday, May 10th on the National Mall. Register today at globalracefortthecure.org.
That's globalracefortthecure.org.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does